Welcome to Pax Europiana, to our debate about peace in the world. I think we can, in that section, absolutely say peace in the world and a better world. That's actually the idea behind it. And how to improve the world order we have since the Second World War, adopt it, and make it ready for the next 30 years, how to win the Second Cold War, and how to improve the global governance institutions. Here in this section, I talk about the regional integration systems of the world. I have already covered the four big state unions, the US, Russia, China, India, also the role model for regional integration, the European Union. And now I want to discuss about the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. It's called ASEAN. You can see everywhere online. It's the organization of 10 Southeast Asian organization countries, which has established itself in 67, basically as an American-led tool to contain communism. And that's, I think, the idea of that organization in the beginning, first five, and then later with the end of the First Cold War, there are now 10 organizations. Obviously, the founding principle of containing communism is no longer the principle, but it's important to understand basically that in a world dominated by China and Russia in the communist times in Asia, it was important for America with in a way client states to help them to get organized, improve, and to organize the region reasonable well and to help each other settle bilateral issues and get the things organized that collapse in the 70s was avoided, and it was successfully so. And when you see now where we are and why I'm actually talking about ASEAN, because for many Europeans that seems very, very far away and maybe interesting for holidays, and that's about it. But in reality, we have a huge responsibility of tragic dimension for the Southeast Asian nations, because it was the European colonial powers who have exploited and dominated and committed huge human rights crimes in these countries in history for over 300 years, and until even after the Second World War, for such a long period, the British, the French, the Dutch, the Portuguese, and they have exploited this region of the world and these wonderful people and their amazing natural resources, which they were gifted by God and by nature. And so what happened is the so-called Spice Islands, they were already, and I'm not one, about the crimes of colonialism. I'm a little bit lenient in a way when it comes to the 16th century, the 17th century, the 18th century, because then you can maybe say that there was this kind of lack of information, the kind of struggle between civilizations, maybe, you can say that. But I think that the crimes from about 1870, when it was industrialized colonialism and imperialism in the super drive, that cannot be excused. And we owe a very big apology to the Southeast Asian nations for all the crimes. And the worst crimes we did, actually, after the Second World War, when the Europeans were already so defeated by themselves, all, and then the victorious Europeans, like the Dutch and the French especially, and the British, tried to keep on the colonial empires in Southeast Asia, which they lost against the Japanese. Then with American support, they were able to regain it. And then they brutally exploited the Indonesians, the Vietnamese, and so on and so on. And I think we should, everybody who is a European decision maker today, should be full of contrition for the past on these crimes, should be aware. And I will propose then specific days to apologize to specific people for the crimes committed by the Dutch towards the Indonesians and the British in Malaya and the French in Indochina and so on and so on. We have really nothing to brag about. We have much to apologize, And I would like, me personally, but in the name of the Europeans, maybe somebody from Southeast Asia is listening, I'm very sorry for all the crimes our forefathers did to your nations. And we are not the same Europeans, we are different Europeans. We also did many crimes among each other, and we have learned, we have improved. We feel your pain, and we want to help to get this over with and to get ready for a better future, united in this beautiful planet with global institutions. And maybe we can learn from each other, help each other, get more prosperous, more secure, more free together. And that's the idea of this podcast and also the attached proposals. So, ASEAN, amazing, 10 members. You will not be surprised if you have listened to some of my podcasts already that I recommend enlarging ASEAN. And that's very important. We have in Asia, in East and South Asia, and of course Southeast Asia in the middle between China and India. These are huge union states, and they have 1.4 billion each. Yeah? And there is the third region, Southeast Asia, with a lot of small countries, yeah? And some medium-sized countries. And obviously that's complicated. And you might already understand what I want to say. It's time for ASEAN enlargement and for including, obviously, also East Timor, also Papua New Guinea, also South Korea, and also Japan. So some will know the history of Southeast Asia and the terrible exploitative occupation of the Japanese in the Second World War, and they will say, no, that's impossible. But ASEAN without Japan is like Europe without Germany. Germany did terrible crimes. Japan did terrible crimes. Germany is integrated in the European Union and a peaceful, fantastic partner of Europe today. And it's the pillar of the European Union. And I think we can expect from Japan very much the same. And also from the former victim nations to forgive Japan, and also from Japan to ask for forgiveness. And also it's not only Japan, it's also South Korea to join ASEAN and so make ASEAN more relevant in a sense, because it will be obviously together in population and size, these 12, these 14 countries, and possible there will be more coming. These 14 plus countries will be more relevant towards China, towards the Western world, towards India, obviously, and to the rest of the world as well. So that is, I think, the very important regional integration step to make ASEAN of 14, and potentially also maybe Bangladesh might be interested. That would be additional. And maybe there's one or the other smaller country, like Bhutan and others, who also, or some of the island states, who also should be integrated in the ASEAN system. That's the first way to do it, enlarge it. The second one is obviously then to deepen and to follow the European Union model and not the Council of Europe model. And so really to add a defense parameter to a stronger one, an alliance system, also to make sure that economic integration in the internal market is happening, and that the liberalization and the reducing of borders, all the things we have done in the European Union from a customs union to internal market, that's the steps of regional economic integration, free trade agreement, customs union, internal market, currency union, political unification. I understand political unification might be maybe never the aim in the ASEAN context, but the customs union and the internal market would be hugely beneficial to all members, and I recommend that. On currency union, I am a little bit skeptical. It's a possibility to have an ASEAN currency, but it's in the how the things go these days, I recommend for ASEAN a kind of a currency mix and a peg to probably the euro, actually, is my best proposal. Could be the dollar as well, but to have a managed currency peg closely attached to the euro dollar link, something like this. Our own separate currency sounds difficult. It can be in the name, but in the reality, I think it's important to have less currency fragility and volatility in the world. You have seen the crisis of 97, which has hit ASEAN so hard, And I think there is a lot of risk attached, which I think can be avoided. On the free trade agreement, obviously that's the priority. And then secondly, to have a free trade agreement with the European Union and ASEAN. And here, there are some topics, I don't want to go too emotional, but I'm really very critical about the European policy here, because we managed now, okay, with Singapore, with Vietnam, we have done some progress recently, but we have also concluded an agreement, not a free trade agreement, but an investment agreement with China. But we have downgraded our agreements now with Cambodia, for example, and with Myanmar. I understand Myanmar, Cambodia, and also Laos are very dominated by China, and they have a terrible human rights record. But on the other hand, also Chinese human rights record is not perfect. Also the Vietnamese is not really perfect. Yeah? It's a communist country both. So we were able to do free trade agreements with them, but we somehow want to punish very hard the Cambodians and Laotians, while they might very much deserve it. It's not the policy boycott countries. Yeah, to boycott, they must be very hostile, aggressive. Yeah, and that's for Iran, and that's for Russia, and for maybe Cuba, yeah, and Venezuela, this kind of level of hostility. But not for Laos and Cambodia. They are poor countries which need support. Yeah? They are under very difficult political circumstances. So it's very important to have a free trade agreement with the European Union and ASEAN. And here comes my favorite topic, one of my really favorite topics, because we don't have that, mainly not because of human rights concerns with Cambodia and Laos. Yeah? That's mainly just because we could easily overcome that issues and include that in the free trade agreement with ASEAN, that ASEAN has a stronger role to help human rights standards. And we have done it with Vietnam and others. But we are not having that because of Malaysia and Indonesia being very big producers of palm oil. And some green lobby in Europe has decided that palm oil is bad for the forests. And so we starve the farmers of Indonesia and Malaysia to death. After all the criminal activities we did already in the past, we starve them and by not allowing their products to be sold on the European market just because of this Nutella story, because palm oil is a crisis and the forest will be destroyed. Yeah? And it's not that, in Indonesia and Malaysia, they have made already massive progress on improving the farming methods there. But still, the European Greens and the lobbyists, they are really very much harming the poor people in the world. And it's very annoying. And how can I say negatively? It's very terrible, atrocious. I really don't like that. Because why? The Indonesians have taken us, the Europeans, towards the WTO already for being anti-scientific. And, then we have started a big mess about some kind of smaller steel ingredients materials, just to have a kind of a deal possible to get Indonesia to retract this complaint at the WTO. I mean, how mean the European trade decision makers and politicians are towards the Indonesian. I could really cry. It's so bad that they don't feel ashamed. Huh? And then they talk multilateralism as their kind of principle of Europe. But when it comes about palm oil and Indonesia and Malaysia, it's only hypocrisy. It's so bad. I lose the understanding and my trust in Europe, because I'm a really very big fan of the European Union, But this kind of treatment of Indonesia and of Malaysia on the palm oil issue, it's so populistic, it's so protectionist, it's so bad, it's hard to believe. Yeah. Anyhow, and so on the cover of Human Rights and on this kind of claim to fame that we protect the Indonesian forest, we somehow let the Indonesians not participate in the European market. While it's a really big country, it's a really amazing country, and it's hurting our producers, our workers, our European economy very much, because we have such a terrible policy mistake. And where it comes from, because some green lobby has discovered, that the palm oil is produced so badly that this is hurting then the Indonesian forests, And so it's much better that the Indonesian people have nothing to work and the Indonesian farmers have no markets. I mean, how bad you can be, that is really something Europe has to come to grips with. And I call to make a FTA, a free trade agreement, with Indonesia very fast, with ASEAN, and to have this strategic partnership, which in December 2020 we just concluded. The European Union has concluded a strategic partnership, but it didn't go so far that we include the FTA because of palm oil, because of such issues like we have so many issues with human rights in Cambodia, but in China we can easily conclude an agreement, yeah? Because China has 1.4 billion and is 14 trillion economy, and Cambodia, nobody really knows where it is, yeah? And then we do this kind of policy. And then we are really, when then the people are saying, it's not so consistent, our approach on foreign policy, then they are right. And again, always remember what kind of crimes we have done to the Cambodians, bombing them in the Vietnam War, to the Vietnamese, yeah, to the Laos, and to all the Southeast Asian people. And then we come with this kind of moral superiority and say, oh, but you in Laos are really not treating human rights seriously. We know exactly how human rights are, and you will not get a trade agreement, and you can eat your stuff yourself. Yeah? So this is not exactly a wise policy, and this is totally wrong. So let's do a free trade agreement. Let's get real, and let's support ASEAN. So now it comes to the UN. Obviously, the whole thing is about regional integration here in this Section 5, and I call for ASEAN to get a UN Security Council seat permanently, one of the 10 regions of the world being empowered. When you add also Japan, and I'm actually against a Japanese seat in the UN Security Council, and also against the German seat, and also against the British seat, and also against a French seat. I'm for an ASEAN seat. ASEAN should have a permanent seat in the UN and also with veto power, because it's about, now it's 650 million at Japan and South Korea, possibly Bangladesh, it's anyhow close to a billion then. So that's the UN Security Council seat, and the EU should sign this in the strategic agreement, that this is the aim the European Union is supporting, and then also provide technical assistance to the Secretariat of ASEAN to really turn into a commission, do the internal market, customs union, etc. Then comes to G7, G8, G20. As you know, I think the G20 format is a disaster. We have not kicked out Russia to have Russia then back in the G20. So what we really need is a OECD kind of board, that means G7 at the moment, but an enlarged G7. We need the really big countries in the G7, if they join OECD. That's my call, obviously. This G would be always for states, so it would be the biggest nation, is obviously then Indonesia, to be also in the so-called G11, where Mexico, South Korea, and Australia should be as well. And so that's for the G11, I call them, and also less Europeans, by the way, because we are not so big in the world as we always dream, and we don't need to run up with Spain and Italy. These are parts of our economic unification, political unification, represented by the Commission and Council President. Then it comes about OECD. Well, the Union of Market Democracies is only open for democracies and market economies. I know very well Philippines, you know, Laos, Cambodia, it's really difficult, and Myanmar, very difficult. But Indonesia, absolutely, come to the OECD. It's very good. Yeah, I understand Thailand is in a difficult transition period and in a power struggle about the constitutional form, so maybe that's not the right moment. But others might be also Malaysia, for example. Indonesia and Malaysia. Let's start. Let's start the process very fast. Let's be in the OECD 2022. That would be very good. And then let's gradually see which other organizations shall be full members and which can be then kind of observer members, candidate members, and be transformed into market economies and democracies by the year 2030 and have some action plan to achieve membership by then. I think ultimately all ASEAN members should join the OECD. And yes, the OECD. And then basically most of the countries, then we basically have India and China and ASEAN, and this ASEAN of 14 countries being basically economically and politically organized in ASEAN 14 and with a seat in the UN Security Council, with most members over time in the OECD, in the Union of Market Democracies, and also represented by Japan, South Korea, Indonesia on the G11 level, and as a strong ally of the European Union in strategic and in and of the West, obviously, but in currency cooperating, in trade with a free trade agreement, and also getting successful and secure together, and also in a way to balance the influence also of communist China. Obviously, ASEAN has its own outreach activities with Australia, with also with India and with China. I mean, that's all perfect. You know, we also have the similar kind of outreach activity. But membership should be not for China, not for India, not for Australia, but for these 14 countries which I have already outlined. And I think this would be then the long-term settlement of Asia in three important, in a way you can call it blocks, entities. That's India, that's ASEAN, and that's China, basically. That's for South and East Asia, the ideal scenario, and we should do everything we can do with strategic partnership with ASEAN to foster that kind of market integration, that kind of free trade agreement, that kind of institutional openness in OECD, in the UN, also obviously in the WTO, to have this free trade agreement and to settle our issues there and really to build a better future together with ASEAN 14. Thanks a lot.